Let's turn to the domestic political landscape, which on this 4th of July is generating its own fireworks. The Belgian diamond story is one of those episodes that crystallizes concerns about the transactional nature of current U.S. trade policy. The Antwerp World Diamond Center gifted President Trump a ring containing 321 diamonds after Belgium secured essentially zero tariff access to the U.S. market. The ethics scrutiny here is straightforward. A foreign industry group receives favorable trade treatment and then sends a lavish gift to the person who controls trade policy. The gift's value isn't publicly specified, but 321 diamonds suggests it isn't modest.
This is where I'd actually bring in some antitrust context, Marcus, because the legal and regulatory frameworks around government ethics have structural parallels to competition law that are worth understanding. When people talk about monopoly power or about government officials using their positions for personal benefit, the actual legal standards are much more specific than the public debate suggests. In antitrust law, under the Sherman Act, which dates to 1890, having a large market share doesn't automatically make you a monopolist in the legally actionable sense. What matters is whether you've acquired or maintained that power through exclusionary conduct, actively blocking competitors, rather than just being very good at your business. The analogy to the diamond gift is this. The legal and ethical question isn't just, did Trump receive something valuable, but whether there's a demonstrable quid pro quo. Did Belgium receive the tariff treatment because of the gift, or would it have received that treatment anyway? That causal chain is what both antitrust enforcers and ethics investigators have to establish, and it's notoriously difficult to prove.
That's an important distinction. The optics are bad, regardless of whether the legal standard is met, and in politics, optics often matter more than legality. The leaked cable about Secretary of State Rubio is a different kind of transparency problem. The cable apparently shows Rubio directing U.S. embassies to actively work against allowing a UN debate on the Cuba embargo. The U.S. has long opposed the annual UN General Assembly votes on the embargo. Cuba wins those votes by massive margins every year. But ordering embassies to block debate rather than simply vote against a resolution suggests a more aggressive approach to suppressing multilateral discussion of the policy.
The intelligence community story is something I've been tracking closely because the cumulative picture is striking. Acting Director of National Intelligence Polte fired dozens more intelligence officials this week. This is not the first round. There have been previous waves of dismissals across the intelligence community since the administration took office. The fired Joint Chiefs Chairman C.Q. Brown, writing in a foreign affairs essay published deliberately on the eve of July 4th, warned explicitly against using the military for domestic political purposes. He argued that politically charged missions erode combat readiness and, crucially, erode public trust in the military as an institution.
Brown's essay is significant precisely because of his credibility. He was the chairman of the Joint Chiefs, the nation's highest-ranking military officer. The fact that he's publishing this piece in Foreign Affairs on July 4th, rather than through a quiet interview or a private letter, is a deliberate choice. He's making a public institutional argument, and the timing adjacent to the intelligence official purges gives it additional resonance. The Secret Service story adds another layer to the institutional accountability theme. A DHS Inspector General report found that the agency missed 102 separate warnings before the Trump assassination attempt at Butler, Pennsylvania. Equipment failures, communication breakdowns, a gunman whose presence had been flagged multiple times before he opened fire. That number, 102, represents a systemic failure rather than a single bad decision.
The FBI mole inside Newsom's inner circle is a story with significant implications for California's political future. The FBI reportedly had an informant making secret recordings within Newsom's close advisors. Newsom himself is responding by proposing legislation that would make pre-certification seizure of election materials a felony in California, framing it explicitly as election protection against federal interference. He's delivering this proposal in a pre-recorded July 4th speech. The political strategy here is transparent. Newsom is positioning himself as a defender of California sovereignty against federal overreach, which is exactly the lane that 2028 Democratic presidential primary voters would reward.
Speaking of 2028, the DSA, the Democratic Socialists of America, announced this week that they would be thrilled if Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez runs for president in 2028. The CNN analysis on Senate math is worth contextualizing alongside this. Analysts say Democrats are leading in House generic ballot polling by what they describe as historic margins, yet the structural geography of Senate races means reclaiming the chamber is unlikely. AOC running for president would energize certain parts of the Democratic coalition, but the Senate math problem is about which states have seats up, and they happen to skew towards states where a progressive standard bearer doesn't necessarily help down ballot. The Vindman campaign claiming Florida Senate polling is within the margin of error is the kind of optimistic framing campaigns always produce, but Florida has not elected a Democrat to statewide office in years. And within the margin of error from behind is still losing.
The SSA Freedom 250 card story for newborns is a genuinely odd one. Babies born between July 2nd and December 31st receive limited edition Social Security cards, and House Democrats have produced a report alleging that donor funds were misrouted in connection with the program. The intersection of a commemorative initiative tied to the administration's July 4th branding with allegations of financial impropriety is going to generate extended oversight hearings.
And Ken Paxton reversing his position on IVF in Texas is significant for state-level reproductive politics. Paxton had previously taken legal positions that created uncertainty about IVF status under Texas law. A reversal suggests either genuine policy reconsideration or political calculation ahead of future elections, or both. Meanwhile, a court cleared the Trump administration to install new interpretive panels at the historical site in Philadelphia commemorating Washington's use of enslaved people. The content of those panels will be closely scrutinized given the administration's broader approach to how American history is taught and commemorated. The housing bill story, Republican Congressman Lawler calling Trump's refusal to sign the 21st Century Road to Housing Act a mistake, reflects real GOP fractures on a kitchen table issue, where public demand for action is bipartisan.